The right to bear arms. For the last fortnight, we have recurringly seen an image of a 12-year-old Scottish girl brandishing a hatchet and a knife as she warns a predatory alien to cease his sexual harassment of her sister. The photograph of her has rapidly become iconic. Notice how the original image has been stylized by AI into an image of historical significance. Indeed, given the circumstances whereby a mass invasion of Western countries has taken place, and that this poses a clear and evident danger to the girls and women of the West, it is now a potent icon of the zeitgeist. The iconic image: the girl is transformed into a warrior, which now carries emblematic and historical associations to Queen Boudica and, of course, to the latent Scottish spirit. The entire episode has become a major problem for the criminal UK government and its propagandists in the lamestream media. But when it boils down to it, their perspective is entirely wrong. Why? It is an unassailable fact that the Hungerford and Dunblane events were false flag operations, each a Hegelian dialectic designed to bring about the removal of the God-given right to bear arms in defence of oneself and or one's loved ones when lives are in peril. Before continuing, let us remind ourselves of two facts. Firstly, that we are not subject to the rules slash legal nonsense of any and all man-made institutions. Secondly, history shows us time after time that when the law is weaponized against the native peoples, they will take it into their own hands. In summary, one, we are answerable to God alone. Two, when the state fails to provide the lawful remedy, the people will create their own. Therefore, given the current and persistent threat of knife attacks from criminal immigrants, it is reasonable to ask the question, do the natives of the Isles of Britain have the right to bear arms? After all, have we not been deliberately disarmed and stopped from being able to effectively defend ourselves from any scumbag who pulls a knife out on us? The iconic image of the girl with the axe and knife is profound. It demonstrates the point perfectly. She knows that the captured ranks of the police will do nothing to safeguard her, and she knows exactly what is necessary to protect her sister. Thus, she has created her own remedy under natural law. I'm reminded of the scene in Crocodile Dundee where the protagonist pulls out a huge knife when a mugger attempts to mug him with a relatively small one. Naturally, being of a cowardly disposition, the criminal runs away. As a boy growing up in the 1970s, sheath knives were popular. We would often wear them attached to our belts as we went playing, not because we were intending to use them to attack people, but simply because it was part of boys' culture and a knife was a tool. One popular game at the time was called Stretch. The two players would stand toe-to-toe and take it in turns to throw our knives so that they would stick in the ground. Our opponent had to stretch his foot out to the knife, and the loser was the one who couldn't reach it. Air pistols were also popular at that time. I had a Webley, not a powerful gun in any sense. It could fire darts and pellets. A rudimentary pistol, but nobody ever questioned the fact that I had it. It was not an issue. And why? Well, the right to self-defense is unalienable. It cannot be taken away. If a burglar breaks into your home, you have the right to use whatever force is necessary to protect yourself and your family. If that force is lethal, deadly, then there's nothing the false authorities can do about it, providing you stand your ground under the law. The golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. After all, any thief, mugger, extortionist, or financial henchman is in breach of the law, and that applies to any burglar who forces his way into your home. The golden rule applies to all, as is clear when we consider just what we would expect a homeowner to do in the event we had broken into his home. Any intruder is taking the risk that he will be killed. He knows it, and we know it. Even the police know it, though that does not prevent them from pressing charges, as was the case with the young Scottish lass, who is facing charges for being in possession of two offensive weapons. The fact is that those referenced henchmen are invariably clad in police uniforms and actively engage in assisting the extortionists when it comes to, for instance, genocidal eviction. I would not have been thrown out and had my home stolen were it not for the unlawful assistance of Nottinghamshire Police Force, who committed trespass, so actual bodily harm, false arrest and imprisonment against me in order to get me out of the way while my house was stolen and tinned up. The British people have been subjected to concerted governmental efforts to disarm them for the last 50 years or so. In fact, I would posit that we have been systematically dispossessed not only of our lands by a Rothschild-backed illegitimate cadre of false crown potentates, but also of their weapons of choice, the right to bear arms in the face of oppressive, aristocratic, state military tyranny. When the illegal forces of fake government have all the weaponry, the individual has to be as resourceful as those of his ancient bloodline who took up arms against their would-be oppressors, namely the government. The Hungerford and Dunblane false flags were prime examples of how such events were used to remove the right to bear arms. In those two cases, firearms. But there is nothing new in government legislation being enacted to disarm the people. The Pentrick false flag event of 1817 is a prime example. The use of scapegoats or patsies to blame for terrorist events is a tried and tested methodology. One only has to consider the use of Osama bin Laden as the purported organiser of the 9/11 attack, the Muslim patsies used in a variety of false flag events across Britain, the most recent being the London attack, the Manchester bombing hoax, and the Borough Market event, which saw the purported Muslim attackers, allegedly, assassinated by the police. As ever, the narrative has to be controlled. Back in 1817, it was, of course, a different game, for the access we now enjoy to all manner of media and technology enables the truth to be heard amidst the usual cacophony of lies, the fake news. The events of 1817 led to the repressive legislation of 1819, known as the Six Acts, being passed. Quote, "The Training Prevention Act prohibited civilian bodies from training in the use of weapons. This piece of legislation hardly seems out of place in the modern world, let alone in the period of disaffection of the 18 teens. It also limited the activities of the agents provocateurs. The Seizure of Arms Act, linked to the Training Prevention Act, gave JPs and magistrates the right to search private houses for weapons to seize them and their possessors. This act also limited the activities of the agents provocateurs. The Seditious Meetings Act restricted to parish level all public meetings that were called to discuss any public grievance or any matter on church and state. Organisers had to provide local magistrates with due notice of the time and date of the meeting. The magistrates were empowered to change the date and or time of the meeting at will to prevent any attempt to organise insurrection. This was perhaps the most serious infringement of public liberty, but it was repealed in 1824. The Blasphemous and Seditious Libels Act fixed the penalties for these activities to 14 years transportation. Magistrates were empowered to seek, seize and confiscate all libelous materials in the possession of the accused. This piece of legislation was not especially effective because it was never enforced rigorously, and also because of Fox's 1792 Libel Act, juries were reluctant to convict people on flimsy evidence. The Misdemeanors Act is the fifth of these six acts, provided for speedier legal machinery so that people could be brought to trial faster. This reduced the likelihood of bail being obtained by the accused, It also allowed for quicker convictions. And the sixth of the acts is the Newspaper and Stamp Duties Act, which greatly increased the taxes on printed matter, including newspapers, periodicals and pamphlets. Publishers and printers had to provide securities for their good behaviour. Any publication appearing at least once a month and costing less than sixpence was subject to a tax of fourpence. The Act restricted the freedom of the legitimate press. Radical publications simply went underground. End quote. All of which were portrayed as a loss of traditional freedoms as enshrined under the Constitution and illustrated by this contemporary cartoon. The man in the street may be currently labouring under the delusion that the government is there to help him, but recent events mean that his delusion is hanging by a thread. Whether or not we are heading towards a true revolution is unlikely, but it is fair to say that any genuine revolution would have to commence in the mind and heart of the individual. Party politics is a chimera that is beginning to break down. The collectivist mindset leads only to more government, which invariably leads to more genocide, for that is the modus operandi of the state. The conclusion is thus plainly stated. We have the right to bear arms in order to defend ourselves from any and all aggressors, irrespective of any and all legislation that purports to deny us that right. Thank you for listening. As ever, I am eternally grateful to those who have chucked a few quid into the coffers by way of the Buy Me a Coffee button, and or have taken out a subscription to my Substack pages, where, if you like, you can also support me by taking out a £5 monthly subscription, which will grant you first dibs on my output. Until the next time, my friends, all the very best to you and yours, and I'll catch you on the flip side.